Roll call. John Meeks is here, video.
Tony Dow, here in person.
Delina Burley, in person.
John Jay, here in person.
Lisa Meyer, in person.
Jim Couts, in person. Commissioner Young is also with us on video. And, please introduce yourselves.
Terry Young.
Lottie Allen.
So I guess the next order of business is to approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Yes, sir.
Do I have a motion for that?
That we approve the meeting.
Yes, from last meeting.
Seconded, if that's a word.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Yeah, so moved. Well, at this time, we have opportunity for public comment. We don't have anyone online. So anyone here in Plata? Mr. Allen? Sure. And
if they're gonna, if I ask, they come up here.
Yeah, if you can come over here so we can capture you visually and auditorily. Audibly? Audibly. That's her.
Can't hear you back there.
I know.
And there's a lot of information there on the Philida Community Parks addition for all abilities play area that has had a lot of ups and downs, as you know. And of course, it was originally advertised for final bid at a meeting. You were there that meeting. No, you were there that meeting. And so at that time, they were going out for bids. The bids came back at $20,000 more. And the interim decided to cancel the bids. Then he informed me that he was canceling them the following week, where in fact he already canceled them the prior week. So we had established the Southwest Washington Community Foundation account because we had about 400,000 plus pledged once the park addition was finished. So lo and behold, when they went to donate into it, because you started to do it, we were told that the foundation account was closed by you. And of course, his money, my money, and the Philida Neighborhood Association's money was there. And I think only $350 was left, but there were $400,000 in pledges waiting to be deposited, which would have covered that 20K override. But then when they went out for a second bid, it came back. I don't know how much it come up at, but it was a huge amount. Then you went back to the, but you also included the parking lot. And so you had asked for additional money for the contractor. So when they finally broke the grant, and so the grant was disappeared, because there was no account to put it into. And because that was a foundation account, we're not about to start a new one, a new process, because it took us about 6 months to do that. So we said, okay, fine, great, the county's gonna pay for it. But the problem is that you had lost the $400,000 opportunity to put it into the All Abilities account. Then many, many times we had tried to contact you after you broke the ground or after the contractor broke the ground. And of course, he kept asking for more money, walking off the job, coming back, broke the stormwater facility or the pipes and everything else that had to be corrected. And then there was some theft of equipment right behind the fenced off area. So a year and a half later, we're still waiting for it to be built. Getting lots of phone calls about that. And unfortunately, you told us to step back. You were going to do it. And that we were going to like the outcome. Well, we don't like the outcome. This is way beyond timeline for anybody. But I'm tired of answering the calls. I'm tired of taking blame for the parks. And when will we see the final result?
So to clarify, you have a couple questions on the parks.
I did. And actually, we had submitted them to you, and we also met on that once. After a year's delay.
Today, if I understand your questions, the questions are is, what's the schedule for the project to be complete? The second question is, and I don't know if it is a question or not, but there was a statement made that there was a potential for $400,000 to go into a foundation, and that's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen because you closed out the account. You didn't even inform us that it was being closed out. We found by accident when somebody was trying to put some money in there, and you spoke to one of the co-sponsors.
So we'll get to the questions that I think I can respond to. So when I got here in July of 21, it was out to bid. When we met with the construction management team, we had one bid. And when we met with them and the project management manager, their recommendation was to wait until the following construction season, because that had been submitted late in the construction season, to get a better price. There's a risk always when you do that. So we did that.
I don't think you were hired at that time. It was the interim. That's what I said.
So,
it was the interim.
No, but I was hired on July 12th. That was my first day. At that time, I was a capital program manager, planning and development manager, and I met. Yes, the interim was the interim, and I didn't become in this position until September 16th of 2021. And I and Kevin met with our engineering construction team and took the recommendation from them to go back out to bid and get more bidders. That decision led to not having a better bidding environment, but a slightly worse one. And we had, you are correct that we paid more for that construction. Since we've had that project, we've had an issue after issue. I don't have a timeline today to tell you exactly when I can guarantee that it will have a ribbon cutting. And because we provided several dates based off of what our contractor told us historically, I'm hesitant to give a date today until I know it is buttoned up. I know that we have the arch.
Yes, we donate the arch.
So the arch is the issue right now for construction, one of the issues for construction, and that the builder of that asset never provided us with instructions on how to set it.
Yes, there were, but they were sitting there on your lot for more than 3 years.
So, ma'am, we followed up with the manufacturer and asked for those building inspections, and they indicated it was a one-off construction. They did not have those. So we are now in the process that they tried to set them up, and it's a big steel circle.
No, it's not a big circle. Well, several arches, but there were specs as to what kind of a construction it needs to secure them so they would be, quote unquote. And they passed the inspection of your own public safety person that does the equipment safety inspections.
Just to clarify the situation, from what you're describing originally, there was a bid in the summer of 21. There's only one single bid. The bid was too high. So
that was 2020, actually.
It was 2020.
2021.
Right.
That was the second one.
I can't speak to prior to 2021. And if I'm, if there was a previous one, I was.
The interim had canceled in 2020, because there was $20,000 override. So I said, wait, don't cancel the bid. Let me call the potential, you know, donors and let's see if they'll donate that money. And I said, don't. But then I found out when he did not call me back, I found out that he had canceled the week before he told me about it.
I understand. Sounds like there's a lot of frustrations and I can understand why from your perspective.
I'm speaking for about 10,000 kids that have decided in that period. So they're in your newsletter.
And what I can say is, I get that you're frustrated and you're receiving a lot of phone calls. I would like to take that pressure off of you and have them call me.
They have been.
Well, to go back, I may, from what you're saying, that one bid was unusually high that you received in 2021. So that's why you decided to have another bid in 2022, correct? So to kind of understand the situation with this, I think something to know is that I work in the water industry and we had the same problems with regard to construction costs.
I have some professional background as well.
Okay, so I appreciate that. So because those costs are changing so much and have been during and directly after.
Yes, the price of eggs has gone up, but the eggs are not using the concrete.
Yeah, it's been an ongoing problem for everybody, as you may very well know, within the construction industry. And so I think what Rocky mentioned, that does make sense to put out for another bid, because typically without COVID, prices are lower if you bid in the down month. So unfortunately,
it was not Rocky that canceled the first bid that was only 20K above, and I got the 20K the following Monday or the Friday when you called.
Can I make a procedural suggestion? You know, and again, this is just how my brain works. Maybe we could hear the public comment first, kind of glean from it what some of the concerns are, and then help staff unpack it. I am not completely in the loop, though I have worked on this project. I'm going to keep that kind of to myself for now. A staff report of sorts would be helpful for me to review, because I'm trying to understand, honestly, where we are. So if that's okay with everyone, just public comment. It's not on the agenda. I want to give them the respect they deserve for coming here and speaking to us. We'll unpack it, ask staff to do some research and follow up. Would that be okay with you?
No, that sounds great. And in the interim, if you do have questions from the community members, please forward them to myself or David, and we will do our best to answer those questions. And for David, seeing how it came in, is
that. I apologize for being late.
Is there just questions in regards to the timeline for the construction project and some of the history on that?
A lot of that.
That's a lot of it, yeah.
And I was just on the phone with Brad Fisher on my way in here.
So part of the reason why I'm late. We'll do our research. We will follow up with a memo to kind of unpack it and provide the information that'll be shared with you. We can talk about it at the next meeting.
We've been waiting for 3 years since it went out for the first bid.
I can appreciate your frustration.
So real quickly, the contractor failed when they tried to put up the arch. Obviously, it's laying on the ground out there.
All the instructions and all the specs were given to the Parks Department. Bill Bierke was at that time.
We'll circle around with that.
Okay. How soon can we expect a response? Because we also having the same problem with the Cougar Creek Woods Park and the trail. Because you and I have been corresponding back and forth. And unfortunately, there have been some things that have been dropped that I expected them to be addressed. But one of the things that you finally did admit that you made a mistake on a ranking scoring sheet, because you scored Cougar Creek Woods Park as a 4.2 acre park instead of the 10 acre park that the RCO gave us a grant for. And it's still listed as a 10 acre. Now, you did admit in your emails that that was your mistake and you were going to have the leadership that you were going to the leadership. And of course, you know, when I asked him if he heard from you, he said, no. I said, I would like to know who in the leadership did you speak to? This has been going on for way too long, but it's $2 million that have been on the books from PIFs that were in that particular district between a trail and the Cougar Creek Woods Park itself from PIFs in District 9. They had disappeared magically during your PROS plan, even though we had testified at that time that.
So your first question was, when do you expect a response? You'll get a response on or before our next PAB meeting, which is the second Tuesday of June. If you would like us to elaborate on the other ranking and other stuff and to make sure that we bring the Parks Advisory Board up to date in regards to that process, we will do that. An agenda item today in our manager's report is discussion of parks undeveloped properties. So there will be an opportunity to learn more about the 17 properties we have currently, the ranking process we went through. Again, we want to make sure that everyone on the board is aware of kind of the process and the work that we're doing to meet the recreational demands of the Greater Clark Park District and the county as a whole.
So in one of the emails after 2 years of inquiries on February 3rd, 2023, I had received an email from Mr. Stipe, which I appreciated. And you said, regardless of the missing components of a formal plan review, whatever that meant, because it was already all approved, it was already on the approved PROS plan for at least two phases. Rocky and I have recommended county leadership that we recognize, honor, deduct commitment on your part, along with larger community, and adjust the development schedule to put CCWCP back in the design and development lineup for some time, you know. But the problem is that all that disappeared overnight without public hearing. So ergo, you can put it right back because it's been approved for 20 years.
So the money didn't disappear. The money's, the PIF money that's in that PIF district is still there.
None. I could not find it anywhere.
So we will try to unpack that as well in the memo to kind of understand. So we are working diligently. There is a land use process that we have to go through that was not missed. There was a hearing that was canceled. So there are.
No, that was a planning commission. And
that's what I'm calling a land use process.
The planning commission had scheduled a meeting and then it was going to schedule another one. But then it went to the Board of Commissioners and they approved it. And also, but
that does not, there's still a land use process with the land to go through the commission.
I used to be a Clark County Planning Commissioner.
I understand.
Used to be. I know how this works. So do not explain that to me again. I know that you have tried to do all of that before, but I've had about 40 years of experience. So one of the things is that this is playing loosey goosey with your ranking, new ranking system that put the community park that was purchased with RCO grants. It was a 10 acre then, that's what was given, that's what it was registered as. And there's a deed from RCO on that 10 acres. Then when we showed up here last year asking for what happened to the Cougar Creek Woods Park, he said, well, you have to get public information request. I'm sorry. All we wanted to know is why did it end up at the very last as a neighborhood park, which is 4.2 acres pursuant to your new rankings.
And we'll respond to that in that memo as well.
Okay. Please respond to all of our emails as well. Thank you.
The concern is there have been elements in government over the years who have been very proactive in attempting to transfer that property to their buddies in contract and development field. They've been quite public about it, they're very open. It wasn't even camouflaged. We were able to make presentations and bring it to the forefront where it did not transfer as expected, but it was still scheduled to be built out, what, 2013?
Well, they were going to do it right after the RCO grant was granted, which was 2009.
Yeah.
The problem was that it was basically gifting of public money in exchange for private profit for somebody who was out of the district with a failing stormwater system that he was trying to trade for the buildable land.
So I appreciate your continued engagement, and definitely I applaud that your village is to ensure that that an RCO encumbered property, which has conversion rights and all kinds of things to help protect it, to continue to be a park, remains as a park, and to continue to make sure that we are planning for and implementing our system. And I understand as our plans have changed, that can create additional frustrations and open up old wounds. And that's not our intent. And we hope that the memo that we create to kind of get into we got to unpack a lot of stuff that's here will hopefully not only bring Parks Advisory Board up to date, but hopefully answer your questions. And if we haven't, we'll continue to try to have this dialogue and engagement to make sure that we've answered your questions at the best of our ability.
We appreciate that, but the residents in the community who have been expecting a park now for the last 15 years are a little frustrated, taking it out on her. And where they shouldn't have to wait 10 more years before someone decides to put it on another plan. And that's kind of where it sits right now.
And I can echo the frustration across many of our other undeveloped properties, and that same frustration and concern with the community when we have an asset there that we have not developed yet. And that's part of what we're talking about in regards to our resources to continue to move through the lens that we have today in trying to meet all those demands and recreational needs. So it is.
All right. Thank you for your time. It was at the top of the list more than once, and it's been pushed to that. They shouldn't have to start over in the process in the queue.
And I believe Mr. Stipe has talked about our engagement to try to make sure that we're bringing that master plan up to date to where it is implementable for development. And that is something we're working on. And again, this memo will hopefully help answer that.
Those kids that love it for it are now 19 years old.
Don't forget to mention your
4th
of July.
Huh?
Forgot to mention your 4th of July thing.
Well, we cannot because it comes out of my pocket. It costs about $7,000 a year. And unfortunately, I cannot afford to raise insurance rates.
After 15 years, we're getting a little out of cash.
Oh,
4th of July fund is a bit short.
But thank you very much for mentioning that.
Yes, that was so much fun.
I did see a permit going through for the 4th of July permit, a roadway permit. So I know that there's activity occurring there outside of the parks.
Well, if I come to Ridgeville, we'll have a big party.
Yes. Not seeing any additional. Has anyone else come online, Amy? All right. With that, I'll move into manager's report. I'm going to switch it up and provide some visual aids for Don. And whoops, I haven't shared my screen, so that's not helpful. I get this up. All right, I got the right date on there and everything.
Yeah, good to go.
All right, so now if I can get it to move, what am I missing? Oh, there we go. So updates on recruitment. So I think last time we talked about hiring a couple people in the capital program. We have just hired last week 3 new people in our operations staff, Robert Doyle, Shauna Merricks, and Antonio Garcia. Robert and Shauna are in our South Unit team, and Antonio is in our West team. So now we have complete teams, which is a great feeling. We hired, I think we talked about Evelyn Ives, but we hired a capital project manager. She started on the 16th, I think, of last month. And she's a PE with environmental engineering background. Been in the industry for more than a decade, making the transition over to the parks now. And so she's jumped in and is already adding a lot of beneficial feedback for us in regards to our project. So it's great. I think her background will help us with a couple big projects out there. So sort of that. We are interviewing for Park Planner 2. I believe we've ended our interviewing and are now in the process of a selection. We're doing that background the due process right now. We're hoping to have this position filled by July 15th. And we have one opening from retirement on our East team for operations. And we have, we're now scheduling interviews now. So the applicant is closed. Now we're to the point of starting interviews. I want to just talk about a couple key things. So one of the things we're having is a confusion with our communications team when people call in and to say, hey, we've got an issue at Lucky Park. They can't find Lucky Park because we don't have a Lucky Park. We have a dog park area that's inside of one of our existing parks. And so I just wanted to have a little discussion about, and maybe it turns into a business item or we're just gonna try to fix it. So currently our Clark County Code 8.15.020 subsection 2 identifies dog off leash areas. So basically the whole code says is that if you're on park property, you have to have your dog on a leash under control, except for in areas where it's designated for off leash. And typically on a park naming convention, sort of a parent child. So you have the park, so Rockies Park, and then the playground at Rockies Park isn't, you know, it's all related to that. So usually you don't use the word park. There's exceptions, of course. So skate park, bike park, dog park. But at Pacific Park, we don't have a different name for the skate park. So it's the skate park at Pacific Park. So that reference of where the park is. And so we're currently updating our dog rule signs to match our regular park rule signs and start thinking about that and looking at our webpage and those things. And so again, usually you have a park, you know, maybe I'm beating a dead horse here. And then those other areas, buildings, features are sort of that parent-child relationship. Think about it, you go to Grand Canyon National Park, you go to the North Rim, which is a entrance and a portion of Grand Canyon National Park. They have the Cottonwood Campground in the North Rim section. You have the Grand Canyon Lodge. Again, there's this parent-child relationship. At Pacific Park, we have a dog off-leash area, also called a dog park, shelter, trail. But most people call it the Dakota Dog Park instead of the off-leash area or the dog park at Pacific Park. And so that's creating a little bit of confusion, maybe a lot with Rocky because I'm having trouble with names. But so people say, hey, we have this issue at Dakota Park, and I'm blank. Where's that? Oh, it's at Pacific Park. So I've looked at our website, and so we reference off-leash dog parks. We list those, and we need to make some improvements here. And so essentially what I'm looking to do is flip that Pacific Community Park should be the lead name, and dog park is subordinate, parent-child, so that when we're talking about the dog park at Pacific Park, also known as Dakota Park, and down below at Lucky Memorial, that's actually at a county park. It's not on another area in the county. And so I believe this is a remnant when that was a legacy land. That program wasn't managed by the Parks and Lands Department. It was in another department. And so now that it's in Parks and Land again, we're trying to use that vernacular. It's a natural area, man. You know, it's the, oh, now I can't say it. It's a combination. Mintler, Loretta, Minkler, natural area. It has two names, and so there's an acquisition and a donation that equals the name of it. Lucky Memorial Park's there. So, and does that make sense? Do you think this requires us to like formally plan is to make these changes and then ask our partner to kind of change their website to reflect that as well? So it's just, I know that there's a lot of, there's a lot in the name, and so we want to be respectful that the dog park and Dog Paw is doing a lot of work out there, but at the same time, make sure that the parent-child relation is still there as we're thinking operationally and other things.
You're not suggesting changing the name, just flipping an order in which they are.
And so that way, if for some reason Rocky died, won the lottery. No, I have to be dead. I have to be dead. And in my will, I want to give $1 million in exchange for naming the Pacific Park skate park the Rocky skate park. Then we would have that mechanism to say it's still this skate Rocky skate park at Pacific Park.
Is there signage, existing signage now?
There's existing signage that says Dakota Dog Park. And you've seen our standard park rules. So there's a little sign above that has the park name, and below is our park rules. Then we have a similar sign at these with that. And we're just looking to, again, on those signs, it would say Pacific Park, Dakota Park, Dog Park. Or we were even thinking about calling it an off-leash area because our code references an off-leash area, not a dog park. And sometimes from an enforcement issue, that can be one word can make a difference for a sheriff enforcing a rule or not.
Could it perhaps just be changed to say Dakota Memorial Off-Leash Dog Park? Just add that in there and maybe put the dog park below?
Yeah, no, that is an option. They can font size as well. More words, smaller the font is.
If you use Google as an authority, you know, I just Googled Dakota Dog Park and it pops up, and it's funny because it says Dakota Memorial Dog Park at Pacific Community Park. So I think you're splitting hairs a little bit. But my question was this, Rocky, what if you have the outliers like you talked about, other off-leash areas where you have, I don't know, do we have shelters that aren't within a park that are just out there? I don't know. Or even off-leash areas that are not within a park?
We only have three that Dog Paw manages that are on our property. And then there's one that's in the city, the Ike Memorial is at a city park. See, I don't know which one because, you know, that's my references, but it's there in the Minnehaha area.
And then
having a park that's just a dog off-leash park, right? You could have a whole site dedicated to that.
We could, if we master planned and that was the site that it is an off-leash area, then yes.
I don't think off-leash parks are allowed in neighborhood parks. So we'd end up having a 16-acre dog park. I think the likelihood of just having one use at a community park is probably not going to happen.
And it's a good thing to bring that up because a lot of our undeveloped properties are de facto off-leash dog areas because we've got a fence around them and we mow it. And so that's where a lot of local people do go to run their dogs.
We have 17 dog parks effectively because we have 17 undeveloped sites that get used as dog parks.
So when we go through the master planning, we're going to hear that as a need, a continued need, but our current level of service and standards for neighborhood parks doesn't have restrooms, doesn't have parking, and it doesn't have an off-leash dog area.
But you're asking the parks board to...
I'm just letting you know if you would like us to have a more discussion and turn it into a formal board, I just want to let you know that we're making a little twitch. I think it's a little twitch. And that's... So when the whole goal, hopefully, I know it's a lofty reach, is that when people call in and say there's a concern, that they're saying Pacific Park, the dog park at Pacific Park, instead of... So now we have new people there, and so we get a lot of questions and answers, and so it's not a mountain, it's just a little molehill. We're just trying to get that parent-child relationship worked out. All right, training. So in our handy-dandy manual that you all have, I wanted to tonight talk about kind of the makeup of our team operationally and kind of where how they're worked out and how many parts each unit's working on. I was going to go into the color of money and that tonight as well, but I figured the weather's so nice, let's give us something to do next month. But and we have a meaty topic later, which is our fee report, and kind of get into that. So We have 37 FTE for parks. We have parks and lands. We have a total of 50 FTE. So the other 13 are on the land side. Of that, you can see all of our classifications and how it's broken down. But we have in administration, we have 2 FTE. We have our capital programming. We have 6 FTE. And in our operations, we have 2 units. We have a west and south team that has 15 FTE, and an east and north unit that has 14 FTE. Again, I'll just note that 29 FTE at the bottom has not changed since 2012. We've added 11 new parks, developed 11 new parks in that time. So the management of, I missed a slide, but instead of in the handout that I gave you, I believe there's a long list of all the property by name or parcel number that each unit's managing. But to quickly summarize it is that in our east unit, they manage 2 regional parks, Lacamas and Captain William Clark. 34 urban parks or Greater Clark Park District parks, community and neighborhood parks. 35 legacy land parcels, and so those vary from really small to very large, and 5 other. Those other are anything from Camp Bonneville to other general fund sites that we do landscaping at. So that could be a Crescent Tower, so we go out there and manage that, or other small parcels like that. In the north, it's 15 regional, 0 urban parks, 41 legacy land parcels, and 4 other. I don't know why that 4 is a little higher. It's all formatted the same, but I blame Microsoft. West, they have 0 regional parks in that west boundary. Urban parks, 32, 64 legacy land parcels, and 5 other. And then south is 3 regional, 13 urban, 18 legacy, and 17 other. South and camp encompasses our campus, so the downtown offices, the courthouse, the PSC, I got public service center, and those Dole building and other buildings downtown, and the Heritage Farm is one of those 17 assets as well. Yes, thank you. And then by our properties by type. And as you're reading through the PROS plan, which is, this is all in chapter 2 in a lot more detail, we have regional parks, which are general funded. Those are regional parks, regional natural areas, special use areas, and facilities. So a boat ramp or other things like that. Our urban parks are Greater Clark Park District parks, our community parks, neighborhood parks, and urban natural areas. And our legacy lands can be anywhere in the county. So some of those are inside the Greater Clark Park District, but not part of those assets. We call those natural areas. And so they're tiny little parcels to ginormous, you know, additional 116-acre parcel that we acquired last year. And then we have regional trails, and I'm classifying those as those are regional trails that are identified out or separate from other parks. So the Chalachley Rail with trail. We have about a 1-mile section that's not inside of a park, but that is an asset that we manage. Salmon Creek Greenway Trail sometimes can be viewed as that, but it is inside of it's inside of legacy land parcels and regional park parcels and urban park parcels. And, so that's sort of us in a nutshell. Any great questions?
How many total acres did you say?
We have, I don't have the number exact, but we have over 13,000 acres that we manage, including legacy lands. And I think we have about 5,000 or 7,000 on legacy lands and about the flip-flop of the other 4 parks. But in section 2 of the PROS plan, it does outline all those acres, but it's broken down a couple different ways. Sometimes we don't consider the 3,800 acres at Camp Bonneville as part of that. Sometimes it's viewed into the legacy lands. We need a definitive number, but it just depends upon It's a little angle, it's just a little prism in regards to whether this property is counted towards acreage or not. And so we're trying to get that number, because it sounds really cool if I say we have 23,000 acres or 22,522 and we've added 12 acres this year.
Well, the reason why I asked, just for reference, was 11,500 acres of all of Portland parks, including Forest Park. And just in my trace program, we had 16. Thank you for doing a great job. We love our parks in the county. What is it, like less than half a person per facility or something?
Yeah, I mean, from an acreage perspective in developed parks, we're hitting it out of the park. But for a cost per acre or a person per acre, we are well below the industry standards.
We should have a big celebration for your maintenance people.
Speaking of which, is on the 23rd of May, we're having a pre-season kickoff potluck. We're going to have hot dogs and you bring your food. As Parks Advisory Board members, if you want to come down to Frenchman's Bar, Riverview Picnic Shelter, you all are invited to come and we'll introduce you to the team. If you are going to the Parks Foundation luncheon on the 11th, we have a table there with 10 of us. Jim's going for representing PAB as our only officer, but that will change the night. And we've invited some of our operations staff, some of our admin staff, and capital programming staff. So we're trying to get as many people as we can an opportunity to see another side of our operations and the good that we do, and not only us, but the whole county does for Parks and Rec. So.
What is the May 23rd?
It starts at 11:30, so 12 is probably the food time, to about 1:30. To about 1:30. So it's about 2 hours, yeah, from 11:30 to 1:30 officially. And I'm bringing, what do they call that in case to meet? Hot dogs, sausages, whatever. David's bringing pot.
I was expecting like brisket. I'm making it.
We are bringing a battling Traegers. So one of our IT guys has a portable Traeger, you know, two big, huge Traegers on it. And I thought about the briskets, but I'd have to get up about 2 a.m. to get it done right. So
I don't know. I just expected that from you. Rocky Houston's brisket.
I was trying to convince Tim, who is the gentleman who owns this Mercer IT, to kind of step up his game, because we call him the protein pusher, because he's got 7 Traegers, and he's always bringing in proteins and, hey, I tried this out. It's horrible with him being on site. Really good. I digress. So this is sort of my department updates, and we're going to transition now to do we have an example? Do you have an example of dark dog park rule signage?
I don't have one.
I'm going to unsign myself out, and then David's going to start talking about the parks undeveloped properties. While he's doing that, I'll see if I have a visual image of the revised park, at least the draft of the park dog park rules sign.
You want me to talk about what? I'm sorry.
Parks undeveloped properties.
Oh, I thought we were just going to be talking today about changing the names in the system, in the GIS system, from park property, not doing the entire presentation.
My bad.
That's okay. So Rocky and I have been running ragged as the weather's changing. I apologize. So right now, so we alluded to the fact that we have these 17 undeveloped properties. And they are in many cases called a park. They're not developed. I would like to I would like to refer to them as a property. So Cameron Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park, there's no park there. And the reason that I would like to call it the Salmon Creek Community Club property is because when we go to do the work there, we don't get into a conversation, or it's easier to have the conversation about, well, why don't you just leave it the way it is because we're using it as a dog park. I would rather not designate them parks when they're not developed. We have code that says this is what you can and cannot have in a community park versus a neighborhood park. Foley Orchard Neighborhood Park is a property that I'm a little bit concerned about when we go to do master planning on it, because the neighbors have really adopted the property. There's an old orchard on the property that they're harvesting fruit off of. It is fenced. They're using it as a dog park. When we go to a master plan for that property to serve all the neighbors in the neighborhood, I'd rather have a conversation about the property becoming a park instead of the park changing to something else. And so that was what I was hoping to talk about today, not the entire undeveloped property list.
It's also subject to RCO.
So in the case of Salmon Creek Community Club Neighborhood Park, we're already working on negotiating a scope and fee with a consultant to do the plan and specifications for that property. So it's perhaps not the best example. Foley Orchard Park is perhaps a better example of something that I would rather be designated as a property. Mackey Park.
Until we have it developed that way, we're managing the expectation accordingly. And when we do a GIS search, it's easier to show and symbolize that what's developed versus undeveloped.
How vacant properties and how you're going out there and people are saying it's already X park that we use for Y. Aren't there a lot of times already a sign placed up there? Out there some sort of a signage?
Yeah, we have a park rules sign because it is owned and managed by the Parks and Lands Division, that those rules apply.
So I would suspect that that signage is more contributing to the public's perception that it's a park than a GIS or something like that. I mean, it's perfectly fine to, you know, change it in GIS if you find that would be helpful, but just psychologically, I would tend to guess that's what's giving them that idea they're frequenting a
Some of our undeveloped property shows up on our website when you go to find a park. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. Mm-hmm. And they are designated there as parks. So that's another place that I'd like to change it to property. If you go and you look at the website, it talks about and not every one of these find a parks pages where you go to a specific park is updated. We're working on that with our public information office to make sure that the information on these individual park property pages is accurate. It will say that it's an undeveloped property, but it may call it a park. And so I would also like to change it to property designation and talk about how it's classified as a neighborhood park and where it falls in our current prioritization list, because we have a prioritization list which we reviewed last October or November when we were developing the capital improvement plan. We have a rough idea of when everything's going to get master planned.
But to your point, you're right. On the ground, we've got a sign up. It looks like, it feels like, whether it's developed or not. Exactly the point. And maybe that's the point where, instead of calling it Mackey Park, we would say undeveloped Mackey property. It's just a small little thing on a signage there to help that these, you know, just like our natural areas, we have the same park rules sign there. We were thinking about, well, should we change the color to differentiate between an undeveloped property versus developed?
I do think something out in the field would be best from a user perspective.
At Mackey, if there's a, if it says Mackey neighborhood park, or if it's just this, I think it's just the rule sign in most cases. That I would venture to guess that there's an undeveloped property out there that might even have one of our monument signs at it.
Yes, that's what I feel certain that I have seen that somewhere. That's what's causing this opinion. But I understand from a liability perspective why you need it. But maybe if there's something that could be put on site to indicate that.
We have a two sign frame that Rocky alluded to earlier, and the top sign says, and it's a smaller, it's half size of the rule sign, says the park name or the property name, and so that sign would be much more affordable to swap out. So you could say Mackey, Mackey property, and you swap it out later when you turn it into a neighborhood park.
Yeah, I think that would be nice, or just future.
Yeah.
It's a good suggestion.
Well, good. While he was talking, and I messed up, so I'll own that on the agenda. This is the sign.
We'll eventually talk about the prioritization list. But
yes. So this is the updated dog park sign, and I can zoom in. I just wanted to show the full thing.
That's
move a little closer.
And then I got to figure out how to do it. There we go.
Yeah, just make it bigger.
So this looks very really color. Everything is very similar to our updated park rule sign. The difference here, of course, as you can see, is the symbology related to the dog uses. Again, we're trying to see if that green square is good. Do that. Red circle the line through it. Don't do that. So even if you don't read the symbology, tells a story for users. And I wanted to get this thing away. And so this is just an iteration of the signs that are already out there, just kind of updating to wear that same theme. We have a responsibility to provide these signs as part of our agreement with DocPaw. Like this one, you know, is that a werewolf or an angry dog? But I mean, it gives that communication.
I don't have my distance glasses.
No aggressive dogs.
Yeah, here with me.
No aggressive dogs. No intact dogs over 1 year of age. It's good to scoop poo and dispose properly. But we're not trying to make it a positive, right? Make sure your dogs are vaccinated. They have a real concern in there to make sure kids are closely supervised. Some dog owners would say that they don't want any kids in there. That's where the playground is. I've heard that once or twice. Must be licensed. You know, I think the sign we have now is licensed in Clark County, but sometimes other neighborhood dogs, a city dog, comes to our dog park. So this is that sign. And this is a draft. We're still working on it, so maybe we still have comments in here. But this should be
worth adding that this follows our style guide, so the colors and the fonts and font sizes and those sorts of things.
So the one, you had the new sign at Cedars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, have you replaced any others?
We have not. I think we have a couple that we've replaced, but we've got a big order of 200 signs, and it's being produced right now. So I'm going to throw out a date, and I'll probably be wrong, but I think we should be getting those in before the end of June, and then we'll start coordinating, working them into our work plan of replacing those signs. We should have. With 94 developed parks, I apologize, but I can't remember AC Fisher, is that what it's called over here?
Carter Fisher.
Douglas Carter Fisher. We've got a new park monument sign that's installed there. It'll stop sharing. So with that, I'm ready to move on to the business, unfinished business item, unless there's questions about the manager's report. All right. So our subcommittee, and note, I've made some typographical errors in here on purpose, Teresa. So if you identify them, you'll know that I did it on purpose. Mrs. Moore. I mean, a whole name issue there. But this is a draft, and I may have left that in there. I didn't have a chance to fix it, but on purpose to clarify that this is a draft Parks V review. The intent is for the subcommittee to report tonight on sort of the work they've done and sort of the draft recommendations, to start getting feedback tonight and then over the next few weeks. And then we'll come back in our next meeting to confirm that it's good or not, and that, you know, if there's any additional edits. And then in July, we would determine if there's any recommendations to move it forward or not. And the background is that we, as a parks department, most park departments have sort of two ways to generate revenue to pay for our services. We have a fee for service model, so you rent this room and you pay for that rental. And in addition, there's some sort of a levy or tax process to generate revenues. So the idea is that those who are using a park or a service pay an individual user fee of some sort, or we all pitch in a little bit to have those facilities. And it's always a combination of those. A lot of park districts have a cost recovery model that sort of helps guide that. So it's sort of, think of it as a pyramid, like a food pyramid, where the more individualized, like sugar at the top, the more individualized it is, the higher the cost recovery is, the more public benefit, like a neighborhood park, there's no cost recovery for it. And it moves up and down off that. And that's set based off of a lot of factors, revenues coming in, the level of service people in the community want, and where we or council wants to set that at. So like at this property in the PROS plan, we assessed it over the previous 5 years, our cost recovery is about 34%. So of all the operating costs to operate this on a daily basis, we get 34 cents back, and that's from rental fees, and then the rest of it is subsidized through our Greater Clark Park District. So in this situation, the community is all supporting this being here, and there's just a small percentage of it is individualized. And so as we were looking at our six-year forecast, we have identified some trends. So our general fund continues to go up as our costs go up. And it appears that that's going to continue to be at the end of 6 years, it's like it could be $200,000 or $300,000 additional. So, but general fund is balanced. So we have to ask for an increase in general fund so we can. It's always going to be balanced. But again, we're seeing that there's going to be an increase in costs. And for the Greater Clark Park District, currently, our costs are exceeding levy revenues coming in. And so we have a reserve of about $8 million. And we have a reserve policy that's now just going to be introduced and approved, where we have to have about $1.2 million in reserve to just cover costs in between when we receive funds. And as such, in our current burn rate or spend rate over our revenues, at the end of 6 years, we're still going to have money in the bank, but we're starting to eat down into that. And as we bring on additional parks, we're forecasting in the future of additional costs to operate those properties. Sometimes that's just materials, services, and goods. Sometimes it's FTE or a combination thereof. And so as we're looking at our reserve going this way and our general fund going this way, our process, my duty is to look at all those funding streams and identify on a fee for service, is there an opportunity or should we raise any fees to help offset some of that? Our other opportunity would be for the Greater Clark Park District, would be what they call a levy lift. And that's something we'd have to go to council and get approval to go out to the voters. And they would, the voters would vote within the Greater Clark Park District to increase the levy rate to a, wherever we say it needs to be at. And so we're MAC, per the Greater Clark Park District, that was a lot of information. It goes to 27 cents per thousand of assessed value is the cap. So when it was, began back in 2005, that 27 cents per thousand gave us about $3 million to operate back in 2005 our parks.
Is it also correct that the more houses are built in our community, the less they pay because there's more?
Yes. And so what happens is we get that baseline of $3 million, whatever it was exactly. It can only go up by 1% a year. So if house values go up 1,000,000%, we can only go up 1%. If there's a bunch more houses, then we're working up that 1%. And so since 2005, now our GCPD budget's about $4 million. And so now we're getting about $4 million. So if you think of that shelf, we haven't gone up that much considering the number additional houses. Population since 2005 is 30% or more. I think from 2010 it was 25% increase. So it's, but what happens is that rate goes down on a per. And right now we're at about 14 cents, 15 cents per thousand assessed because that the Department of Revenue, if I've got the right term, has set it up to where they're aware of this and it's sort of designed to go back to the voters and raise the levy to get it to where it is. Other places I've seen was where you set a levy at 12 cents per thousand. That's the levy. And you go and you can ask for increase the levy, but if house values go up, you get additional revenue to manage your services. If house values go down, you have less. So you, and there's a dueling function. So if house values go down, like in 08, 09, we went back up and we capped at that 27% when the house values went down. Then as house values went back up, the rate that individuals, homeowners are paying actually goes down. And so going out to the voters for a tax is never what we want to do. At the same time, you know, this is a process I think we should be doing at least once a year, just checking in. Doesn't mean we're making any changes, but we should be checking in to see what market analysis. So what's our costs? What is our competitors or other jurisdictions charging? And so that's what we've tried to do here is do a thorough, we can always do more, but do a thorough assessment of where we're at today, why we're at it today, and looking around the neighbors, and then make some recommendations or some draft recommendations. And so in 2010 was the last time we had any increase in fees. The asterisk there is park fees were turned off and turned back on during that period of time. And some shelters fees, like in our Greater Clark Park districts, didn't come on until I think 2017. So there are some fees that haven't been, so they were free for a period of that time. So the parking fee went from its current rate to free, and then it was reinstituted, I believe, in 2017. So there's been a little volatility in all this as we respond to economic pressures. I think the subcommittee took a lot of time thinking about socioeconomic issues, impacts for communities, and figuring that out. And so that when we are looking at things, so for like for shelter rates, we look at having a peak and non-peak rate, which other jurisdictions have, and instead decided to have a varying rate based off of how often something's used. So we have a lower rate on a less used pavilion or shelter, a higher rate on those that are used more. Again, trying to get a per capita capacity rating so that we have it set up so that if you have fewer people, you can use a smaller shelter and then again have that. We did look at the potential of scholarships or other discount programs, and they get really, really complicated in staff time in assessing, do you qualify or don't you qualify? And the goal here is to offset our existing costs, not add additional costs. And so that's a factor that we weighed in. We looked at other options of could we partner with YMCA or I can't think of that group out of Southwest Washington. There's a lot of groups out there that we could coordinate with where we provide annual parking passes or at a discount or get a, or work with them to get a grant where there is a resource, but usually they're partnerships instead of a one-stop shop where the Parks and Lands is now researching all of the criteria. Same thing we did with our fee discount for disabled veterans. Instead of us going through and qualifying, we identified a way to utilize an existing system, the state disabled parking pass for, so people didn't have to go through two processes. And again, it was a way of trying to do that. So there's a lot of stuff here and I don't know the best way to kind of go through it. So Jim, I think we should go through parking fees varies from, we want to simplify the program and have a single fee instead of several fees based off the size of the unit. We identified the 93-94% of our daily park passes are vehicles. And so this, again, allows, does that mean this big RV with a boat could take up 17 parking stalls and they're only paying the same as a small car? Yes, but that is a minority of our users. Most of our 94% of our users are in a passenger vehicle. The idea also is to look at expanding to other destination parks, be that sports destination or natural resource destinations. And maybe that's phased in over time, but again, that's we're seeing a lot of pressure and overuse in a lot of parks, i.e. more maintenance needs at a lot of these destination parks. And so this would be a way to kind of help offset some of those operational costs and generate some revenues to kind of offset that. It costs anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 to set up a little electronic card reader, cash taker, parking meter. And the idea would be is we would generate. Hi, are you in the parks? Coming here for parks? And that would generate, right now we generate about $530,000 in gross receipts on parking after our cost for staff and materials. You know, we're netting about 340. The thought is to try to get to these little parking units we have. What's the name of them? They're solar. Yeah, they're solar. We've had a few years. I think 2018 is when we installed them, and that we've had pretty good success with them overall. We'd be looking most likely to have them as credit card reading machines instead of the cash ones. We have more problems with the ones with cash in them. But again, looking strategically as to we need to have some cash machines and some shelter fees. We kind of went over that in at a big level, but we're in the parking fees, we're kind of in the middle. So there's people requiring $10 a day for parking. There's free parking, $5. And so we were looking to go to, right now we're at $3 for a passenger vehicle. Maybe looking to go to potentially $5 and have a single rate and then go to $40 for the annual. But that means for an annual pass, that would bring it down to 9.12 cents per day if you use it every day, or almost like an $1,800 savings over the face value. So again, there's a way to provide a savings and a benefit for those people who are heavy users who are also on fixed budgets. Trying to find that as a way. our meeting room fees here. This is the only meeting room we have right now. We're well under the market on that. Again, we were looking to divide this into, we identified that our uses, so we have a lot of day use and a lot of evening. We kind of have two distinct times, and so we are looking to have the room split into those two. Most of the use here is county departments utilizing it for county business. We don't get any fees off of that, and we continue not to do that. However, we do have other events that come here for public meetings at night or during the day for other things. We'd be looking to have sort of a twofer there and making sure that our setup and breakdown and those sort of deposits are sufficient to cover anything that we have to take care of. Event fees is probably where we have biggest discrepancy in equity right now, I think, in regards that we go from $25 to $250 from a tier one to tier two event. So that's going from zero to 100 people or 100 to 200 people. So it's amazing. We get a lot of right under 100 people. So again, we're trying to develop a fee process that is set up that's more, what's that word? What can I think of that? Gradual? Sounds like linear or gradual linear payment structure that's more it balanced, as well as we have a lot of our fees that aren't covering anywhere near our costs. So if you want to come into a park 2 hours early, we're charging you $20. I have to pay about $100+ per hour for overtime to have that person come in and open the gate. Right now we charge $25 for an alcohol fee. We don't allow alcohol in our parks, and if that's our rules, then we don't want to have alcohol in parks. Again, we should have a fee that's sort of associated with that. So the idea was to have there's a lot of risk associated with additional. A lot of times people just want a toast at a wedding or something like that. It's not like they're having a cake, but going to a $250 fee there. And then having those a la carte fees, I call them, as if you want a bounce house, if you want these other things, we're trying to get those itemized better so that there's a lot of staff time that goes into that. And we're trying to manage that administrative cost. Other places I've been, we just charge administrative fee. So there's just a reservation fee or administration fee that we add on to everything. The subcommittee wanted just to have a simpler. So it's not like going to a hotel and it's $69 a night, but the bill's $100. And, you know, there's a resort fee and then there's a tax fee in that. They're trying to kind of have that simple billing process. Sports fields is another inequity thing we have, is we only charge right now for fields here at Luke Jensen. And we have sports agreements with some leagues to do some work. Sometimes it's they developed it. Sometimes they're doing some maintenance, but it's sort of all over the place. And we have other fields where we don't charge anything. And so as such, we have a cost, and if it's a grass field, there's a high cost of mowing. We have to mow it two or three times a week instead of once a week. If it's a sports field, we have a much higher operational cost to maintain that field and keep it to a level that's operational and safe. And so those, again, are benefit to the community, but at the same time, we're trying to find a way to generate a small amount of money to help offset some of that cost. Or look at those agreements, replicate those agreements we have where those leagues have a sweat equity opportunity to kind of offset some of that. Feels like I'm missing one fee. I think that's pretty much it. I did get some questions beforehand, and I'll try to remember them off the top of my head. The equity and inclusion and diversity lens that we were going through was sort of an item by item. We've not expressed that in a standalone here in the report that sort of pulled it out. That may be something that we need to do a better job to report on how we were looking at the socioeconomic and geographical diversity and some of that fee structure. And I'll look for some of that feedback. When we didn't have our fee from 2008 to 2017 for parking, what were those operational impacts? And that's sort of anecdotal right now. And so again, in a nutshell, is we lost $500,000 in revenue back in 2008. It may have been less revenue, but it's been about a $400,000 to $500,000, it looks like. And so we lost that revenue. In addition, our cost to operate went up in our regional parks specifically because use increased potentially, but a lot of trash came. And I've seen that other places. My last property, their management, we reduced the rate, and we had in a 1 month time, we had a 35% increase in our trash volume.
One thing that I noticed in reading this report is there was a lot of talk of staff time after the events cleaning up. That's a big expense. What about the idea of charging some sort of a deposit where we would then go through and based on how much time it's going to take us to clean up, they would or would not receive back that deposit in order to incentivize them to clean up? Was that looked into or?
You know, we talked about deposits primarily for this facility than the others. And I know other places have had resiliency in users wanting to put a big deposit down. And so I think that was that other thing is that an economic barrier in having a lot too large of a deposit for some people? And I think that we had some discussion about it, but I don't think we settled on seeing if we needed to increase that. Right now we have issues, but if they increase, then maybe that is something we need to go to.
Well, you will also add administrative time to calculate that, right? So you need to have someone who is going to check the site before and after, document how many hours, submit that to someone who's going to process that on a report. I do have a lot of, I think, concerns. I emailed you, thank you for responding to me, with the whole equity lens. I'd like to hear from the committee sort of their thinking and the reason why, just, you know, to be fully transparent. I just sat down and did some numbers. We take our daughter to rugby, right? And so I was thinking, okay, if we have a rugby event here and there's a parking fee and there's an event fee, and let's say the parents want some wine. So I was doing calculations. I emailed you and I said, is it like, I think I used the wedding as an example, but in my head, I'm also thinking just like as a parent, you know, $1,200, $1,500, right? And that's not including all the fees for parking that the parents who are coming to an event would pay. So that it was more like, and we could afford it, but there's a lot of people in our community who can't. Like, they will not take their kids to these functions. They will not take their kids to parks. And I get it, they could get like a parking permit, but I'm just, you know, I'm a park practitioner who is not a big fan of fees. So
did discuss like parking fees for here. You can't put it off, but I personally am not fine with that. I mean, you got to bring your kid here 3 days a week, whatever, whole season, starting to talk. No money on top of fees that the kids already paid in uniforms, whatever else. Then ball type of fees. Anyway, we did have that discussion, at least on some of those.
I think there's, if I can interject with sort of from the O&M perspective, a good example is we just did a pavement repair project at Climeline, probably 5 years overdue. We replaced 30,000 square feet of asphalt, grinded out, put new asphalt in. And we're going to seal all that and then stripe it. So that project is going to cost $270,000. It's not a new parking lot. It's repairing an old parking lot. If we didn't have the, sort of the revenue side of this funding stool, you could make the argument that not only does the staffing side suffer and sort of the day-to-day sort of operations maintenance suffer, but the facilities all get threadbare and we don't have the resources to repair those facilities that just get worn out as they're getting used. I was in Philida Park the other day, and we're going to add that parking lot to the pavement maintenance projects, the other side of Climeline. And so we'll have to make really hard choices when it comes to those sorts of things. We could go to gravel parking lots, But they still have cost systems.
And that wasn't my point. So I'm not talking about capital side of things. I know it's connected because you want to build that into your formulas. I get all of that. This whole thing was hard for me to grasp in absence of a cost recovery target, right? Has council given you guidance? Is it 30%? Is it 40? Is it 50? Is it 90? Because when I was here, it was a lot more than 30, 40, or 50. My question was more about how do we ensure that parks are accessible for all, right? We know that we have 17 schools in Clark County that qualify under federal guidelines for free and reduced lunch for everyone, not just kids who live in poverty, but everyone, because of the number of kiddos who already qualify. So my question is, and again, parks are not just for kids. It's a, you know, limited point. And I understand the timing. I was in your shoes. I get all of it. I'm not, you know, trying to attack the idea. My question is, what is the mechanism by which we ensure that everyone has access to parks? To your argument, yes, there are parks that will get these resources because I'm assuming you will invest these dollars in the parks that you generate revenue for. What about parks that you don't? Unless there's some reason why you can't, right? Maybe there's a qualified issue, I'm not aware of. So I'm just struggling from in that, you know, because I've seen kids in our own rugby group that, and parents that can't afford to play. So others, you know, would go out and raise money to make sure that they can.
I think in a perfect world, we would have to worry about the parks would be fully funded by our taxpayers, and we wouldn't be talking about this. But I know when I moved here from Nebraska, and it was right after they had stopped doing anything in the parks for the whole story. So they got ran down real fast. I mean, oh my God, it needed maintenance everywhere. The trees needed pruning, there were broken sidewalks, benches, graffiti, trash. And another thing in a perfect world, everybody would chip in. I mean, we would all clean up trash. You know, we wouldn't leave our dog waste here. We would just be wonderful. So I don't know how you don't charge fees. I know what you're saying, that we want to have access to the kids, you know, families who can't afford it. I went to school in high school and I got free lunches. And that was before free lunches was for everybody. So I understand all that. But I just don't know, unless we can get the Clark County Council to fund, give more money to the parks, how are we going to do it?
So and I'd say it's not just council.
It's not charge. So maybe I should clarify that my point is not, it's not charge. And my point wasn't, let's not do any of it. My question is, how do we make sure that those that already have limited access have access to parks? Is there a donation program, a deposit, or like, what is the mechanism?
Well, they could apply for a free parking pass if they have the lower income level, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so this is where I'll push back a little. How am I paying for that staff time to do that?
And
that's where we were talking about is, do we have other partners to the question of the 94 developed properties we have. Currently, we have four that we charge a parking fee.
I have a time knowing they don't pay for their parking.
And if we did, I'm just picking on parking fees alone right now. If we did look at increasing the additional 13, we'd be at 17 of 94. So from a percentage perspective, most of our parks are free and open. They're designed for that close to home interaction so that you can walk there, you can do that stuff. We've only chosen the community parks where we have developed sports fields that create additional workload for our staff above that thing. So that we were trying to balance that thing and looking at those partnerships. And so if the YMCA, why can't I think of the Summit Council for Southwest Washington? We're having a luncheon in a couple of weeks. There's other organizations out there where we could partner with and figure out how do we provide them reduced, free, whatever it is, parking passes, so they're managing that and dispersing those, not staff. And so I'm just trying to figure out how do we open the room up to from a social economic level of trying to do that. I've seen where, you know, the parking fee is free with your fees, so it's already part of that thing. And again, if we were doing a volume discount, that makes it easier for us to engage with council about discounts, those things. But we're, it's one transaction instead of 1,000 transactions.
And that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I'm, what are the options for people to engage in the bar system? Yeah.
And for a wedding, you know, right now someone, I think I saw a permit, there's $50 in fees, plus the rental of the space for it, which is an amazingly inexpensive way. If you look at a lot of the rentals for wedding pavilions, you're looking at $5,000 just to open the door. And then there's all the other things. And sometimes they require that you have to use their caterer and this and that. And so it gets really expensive really fast. And definitely that's where in the wedding scenario where you're, you know, how big it is, you know, it's a $500 to $1,000 all-in cost if you want alcohol and make noise, amplified sound, and be over capacity and all those other things. And so those are, if you look at it per person, if it's 100 people and you spend $1,000, that's $10 per person. So again, that's pretty fair price compared to other places, you know. I didn't have a wedding because of that economic.
Well, and the wedding wasn't wrong.
But no, but I'm just saying, you is know, that I am like empathetic to that. And
our,
is that
our club, right? Mm-hmm. We spent $2,500. We raised barely anything to cover that. But the point is, like, we are going from $50 to over $1,000. And that could be a sticker shock for a lot of our nonprofits, a lot of the community groups. And there's, again, it goes back to that cost recovery. It goes back to benefit analysis. I'm not arguing we need to have money for the park system. I think I was the one who told you have way less people to manage way more parks.
Right. And again, this is this first point for us as the Parks Advisory Board to talk about the recommendations and the things that are in this draft report may not end up in the final report, but it's this, it's this intellectual exercise that we need to go through and set those values. I agree with you, Galena, is that, and one of the recommendations is here is that we need to work on a cost recovery policy. So we have that policy to work from. So it's not here in the decision making. You know, it's up here. We've got guidelines and now we can take our actual costs and look, and it's more scientific. And again, this is just one of those tools. We can raise money to keep meeting standards. We can tighten our belt, reduce our level of standard on things as well. There's a lot of tweaks. And again, this is step one in reviewing the fee structures. We may be way off base, and that's why we're here. That's why we have you here to say the subcommittee thought this was a pretty good idea. Right, Jim?
And I think we looked at the cost from what other jurisdictions charge for. We're not terribly out of bounds at all.
No, I think we're equal to or less than most of our adjacent jurisdictions.
Right, so the park, a lot of these fees I see on this are raising fees on things that would exclude access to others, like say alcohol or nation parties, and they're all still relatively affordable for people to access, I think. So I think this proposal is very close to that mark in terms of ensuring access while still imposing costs where they should be imposed. Because if you are doing something that excludes from the general public, then you should.
And then for most of our parks, coming in there for the day to do stuff, it's going to be free. And again, if if I could save you $1,800 tomorrow, would you be willing to spend $40 a day? You know,
I buy the.
But, no, but I mean, it is. It is that it is a tough thing, and I don't like fees either as a user. It's not one more thing I have to think about, and it is a barrier just because. If nothing else, it's an intellectual barriers. Oh, I have to think about this, so I don't want to go, you know, because I'm lazy sometimes. And so I totally get it. And it is an economic barrier. When I can share my story, I'm not. But I mean, there are those things, and it's just trying to find this balance. And this is the fees that we are charging or proposing to charge or increase are related to more individual focused activities. So again, trying to use that food pyramid, the sugar and oil. You know, and those things that are more open than others, you know, that's where if you paid $5 every time you came to Jensen for a season, it gets real expensive. But we have the annual pass, we have the opportunity to hopefully work with the league. So we, you know, again, we have these ideas, and again, there's going to be some other great ideas here we can get flushed out, and maybe there's four or five, 25 things here we're like, where your first hurdle is to get it from a draft to the full recommendation, and then we'll need to go to council, and they're the ones who will set the policy in regards to any fees or any of that process. Once we kind of have a fairly good edit of this, it's still not going to be final, but it's the next reiteration, we'll be going out and having it on our website for public review, so we'll be able to get public comments that way. We're also trying to set up a meeting with our youth sport leagues and other sport partners to have a round table discussion on those parking fees specifically, again, to get that feedback. So again, that we're making sure that we're turning over those rocks, we're talking to people, engaging, getting that feedback. We may get a bunch of, oh my gosh, fees, and we may get, this is a good idea, a fee increase story from my own past that still surprised me today, is that when I was in our last place with this fee analysis, we identified that it cost us $39 per camping night. It was for camping, to just to manage that campsite. We were charging $17 to $25. So we went on, we proposed a fee increase, varied it. It's kind of like here on shelters where it went from $17 to $89. And those higher priced camping sites, granted, they're at the beach, they're at the ocean, our utilization went up. And it was like we were underpriced, we raised the price, and we got one. That's just one example, maybe it's an anomaly, but that additional revenue then allowed us to continue to improve those campgrounds and provide the services that people wanted. And now they're breaking ground on another one in that system, and it's going to continue to be that. People that come there to spend their money, and that money then keeps people there, keeps them open. And so it's sometimes you're shocked that you raise a park a fee a couple of dollars and you're expecting a lull in use, and it actually increases use. I don't know why it wasn't the camping and we're going to do the study, but it was really fascinating, is that and we followed that up with a couple of capital projects that then saw that the money, there was an ROI, return on their investment, and it was, and our problems went down. So that's just one thing. Is there specific items or fees or anything we want to talk about tonight? Do we want just time to digest it? Send me edits, and then we'll try to compile it. If you get it to me by the middle of the month, fourth week, to be able to have I or Amy integrate those. We can do a bunch of track changes documents and then kick out the Word document and make it really fun for Amy. However, I want to make sure that your input and your process and the way we're doing it align.
I guess my, just to clarify, so you need input from us to make a recommendation to council, right, for them to take final action. And when are you planning to go to council again? June?
I don't have that scheduled. That would probably be September. And we may have a work session or council time in during the process to kind of update them where we're at. But my intent was to get through us, come back in a month, check in what feedback we've had, and come back after we have a public engagement process. We have that meeting with sports teams. We have a 30-day online comment review. And then come back in July for here's what the final iteration of it is. If there's like, cut this, hell knows, pardon my language, that'd be great to have in the next month so that we're pretty close in the June 1 version when we go out for a public comment.
I think the only item I would have spent on then is your equity lands with alternatives for access to low-income and BIPOC individuals. Okay. And you could do that. I like the idea of doing it through organized means. I don't know how far-reaching that would be. I don't know if you'd be willing to do it for
like neighborhood associations, right? Because I'm looking at the list and I see community parks. They're intended by their very nature as destination parks. So it almost feels punitive if a person can't walk to their own local community park for them to then pay a fee. So I would just be mindful of that. Not that I understand this was a business document. Maybe adding that language around access and options would make it just more inclusive. In my, this is how my brain works. That would make me happier.
Right, and I'm, we want the, wow, this is the best thing since sliced bread, or what are you thinking? And hopefully somewhere in between there in regards to this, so that we get a pulse of the board and hopefully the community as we move forward. I don't want to revolt that, wouldn't we have to have a $5 bill in the park now? I only have $3 in quarters.
Washington Park generates $2 million in parking revenue. So I hear you. I totally get it. I'm not against it. Like I said, I'm just trying to advocate for the folks who are not at this table, who cannot afford access to these services. And so I'd like to personally see some emphasis on how you're going to provide that.
We'll review our work and work to meet that documentation and that discussion. And as noted, some of that may be, there's ideas, kernels out there that will require further engagement if it was implemented.
How many hours was spent by the subcommittee on this to come to these conclusions in this draft?
We had four meetings, and so for PAB members on the clock, they had about 8 hours.
8 hours total.
In the meetings, yes. And then outside of that, you know, staff time wise, we had three staff working on this intermittently, collecting data, checking other jurisdictions, me writing it, collecting that stuff. And so I haven't tracked those hours specifically.
It seems like because three of the board members have already been compiling this, a lot of work has already gone into coming to these conclusions. And then three of us are. Three of us are, you know, sort of reading it for the first time. Okay. But so there has already been, it seems to me, a lot of thought that's gone into it. And I appreciate you guys having already put in that time and effort.
I'm not going to be offended if somebody's got any good ideas.
And if there's a vote that says this is great work, we don't want to move anything forward, that's part of the process. And that just we just move to the next element of our financial analysis and how we operate the department. And so that just
and ultimately the council will make a decision. It's not ours.
But if you guys aren't recommending something, I'll be hesitant to move it forward.
Yeah.
If I don't have your support, then we have to do some soul searching to be able to move it forward.
I think to Tanya's point, the idea of moving this forward has been vetted. But my recommendation is that we also add elements of inclusion and equity and spell those out. Would be the only recommendation.
And we thought about it, but we didn't spell it out, I think.
Yeah, it just says equity lens. Yeah. I mentioned it to Rocky. I said, what is that mean?
Yeah, I think from what they've said, they have already conceived of some of those points. So perhaps if they just spelled out mm-hmm. what they've already thought of and already included.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
That would speak to you.
And I don't know how many pages this is now, but I was 24. I was like, oh. I started as I was compiling, and I was like, oh.
The parking fees are super question on that parking. It mentions the potential to expand to other parks that don't currently have parking fee systems. Was any consideration put into what impact that would have on, say, neighborhoods around the parks? I know Vancouver Park, or say Vancouver Lake is still far out there. You know, you can just put a park, you know, there's nowhere else to park.
It's a huge park, huge park too.
And there's a plenty of that park already.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't mind those, but I think that's fair.
And yes, we had a lot of discussions about the parking fee and addition, and there was a lot of items discussed. I don't want to say concerned, but there was, we assumed that there was going to be a lot of feedback on increasing the number of parks and getting into, and that's where we look to determine the precedent's already been set that a community park does have a parking fee. So it's not like we're breaking ground there. It's just we're looking to others. It's really interesting is that at Klein Line, the community park has a parking fee. Right across the parking lot is the Salmon Creek Regional Park. See? And that's and that's where it's a destination for sports, for the softball leagues there. And so I don't have the history of why half was versus the other half, but you know, again, we were looking at all that and his utilization, access, all those things were talked about. And again, I'll speak for myself, kept coming back to is trying to find that balance in regards to if people are coming here for practice and stuff, there's a high frequency, so that annual pass would become, there's an opportunity to work with the league to provide either something there to offset part of that cost, whether it's a discount or something like that. Same thing with field rental fees. That's where I thought there'd be a lot of pushback as well. Because at Philida, for example, there's no cost there.
Yeah. What I mean is.
But like, we get a lot of direction on how to set it up and how to do stuff. We can't mow on this day. You can't do these things. And so we work around a lot of the schedules. And so that's where that nominal hourly fee was. Again, it was to try to offset that to where we can work it into our schedule. And, you know, that, I to be frank, I anticipated a lot more feedback probably from the community about those field rentals. You know, we spoke to Camas about their rates. You know, they don't charge right now on parking fees and some of those impacts to the fields and things like that. And so it's a tough discussion. And you're right, if we had a tax base that paid for everything, then the other fees become not worth the admin time to collect it. You know, when I was at my last place and we stopped our parking fee, there was a lot of staff time that got freed up to do other things. Counting money takes a lot of time. Collecting money takes a lot of time.
Especially with your PeopleSoft system.
So, well, thank you. We have one more. We have one business item left. This was old business, which is selection of your chair. I can't say it because I'm being recorded, but one person did sign off. They used the names that they voted in. We have six members now. We have one opening still. We're still trying to get a confirmation on whether we have to go back out or not on that one. Currently, these positions would serve until December, where you guys would vote for the 24 calendar year chair. Vice chair. Secretary is in our bylaws, but that position isn't taking minutes anymore. We've kind of asked Amy to be here to do that for us for a lot of reasons. We're trying to respect your time and commitments, and it's easy for us then to go back and through and do the edits in the off days as well, instead of waiting until we ask a volunteer to submit them and then get them out. So it's just trying to. We got the horsepower compared to volunteers. So do we have any nominations for chair?
So.
Oh, discussion.
The discussion. The previous, I think the previous rooms had co-chairs. And
we did
and
have.
And there was a mention in co-chairs.
Yeah, that is an option. So chair, co-chair. Chair, vice chair, and secretary. And if all positions don't want to be nominated for selfishly, I need a chair so I can drag someone to go to public meetings, council, and to run the meeting. But we want all positions. Great opportunity. Resume builder.
I think I prefer the idea of the chair and then the vice chair. I think that makes it easier to run the meeting, personally.
We nominate somebody else. And then we have Jim to be chair.
Second odd nomination.
If he's willing, if somebody else wants to be chair.
I think I would nominate you to be chair, Teresa. Yes, but it sounds like,
I'd at least get a little spare time to various places.
I can be vice chair.
I would nominate Teresa.
All right, second, all right. So.
Ego.
Yeah. So we have, I assumed you don't.
Donna's secretary, I love that. That's what happened.
Do we have any other nominations for chair or vice chair? I heard a potential nomination for secretary, but did we have a second?
Yeah, I'll second it. Did I nominate it a second? Did you nominate it a second?
Oh.
Don.
Who?
Don.
Don, secretary? Okay, what will the secretary do, given Amy is taking the notes? That was.
It'll be like a sergeant of arms. They'll make sure that people come in and sign the right paperwork.
Okay.
It's, and we may look at our bylaws and you guys can.
There's a position description, I think, too.
But the core thing the secretary was doing was writing the minutes in the past.
Rules of order, they did rules of order. Like if we were stuck, if Stock didn't know. Robert.
Robert's book.
I'll give them the rubber.
And then you've got your.
My daughter took my car and took my.
Robert's Rules is a wonderful read.
Thank you.
All right, let's vote. I'll just be the guy, Jim, I apologize. We have a nomination on the floor and a second for Jim as chair. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So moved. We have a nomination and a second for Teresa Meyer to be the vice chair.
This way.
But it's pronounced Moore.
Teresa Meyer Moore.
Not Lisbon pronunciation.
It's my second language.
Gosh, we have all in favor? Thank you. Opposed? So moved. So congratulations, two new officers. Or an upgrade in one officer. Well, oh, and we have a nomination, a second for Mr. Meeks to be the secretary.
Can we do this in his absence? He's just going to return the fine. I mean, he can't accept.
Robert's Rules states that you do not have to be present to be nominated for something.
He can resign next month if he wants to.
I guess so. We'll have to see a safe funny time though.
And you guys all have.
Yeah, so you'll have an opportunity to.
I can't wait.
I got my eye on it.
We have a motion on the table. We had discussion, pending no more discussion. Vote yay for Mr. Meeks for secretary.
Yay.
Opposed? So.
You got your officer.
It's been a year.
Thank you to everyone who is serving in those capacities.
Well, Jim, as the chair, going acting any longer, I think we just have a round table left.
Do you have anything to say? We haven't said so far.
If I can give a real quick,
sure,
sort of major maintenance update, since I came in late, I apologize. And I don't know if Rocky already did this, but we had a bid opening for roof replacement at Hazeldale. Did you talk about this already? We thought we were only going to be able to do one or two roofs, but we're going to be replacing all the roofs at Hazeldale Community Park. So both shelters, the bathroom, which is in really bad shape.
What's the material we're going to go with? Is it asphalt, metal?
It's three tab. So basically replacing the shingles with the shingles. 30-year warranty on the shingles. So a nice quality recap roof. I mentioned the parking lot at Klein Line. Once it's coated and striped, it'll look like a brand new parking lot. If you go out there and look around, it's a patchwork right now. That work will get done. Hopefully the coating the whole thing will get done sooner than later, but we're sort of at the mercy of the Public Works Department's pavement preservation program. So we did that work out then. We're getting ready to do another round of hazard tree projects. This time it's Jorgensen, Minkler, Lucky Minkler, Dog Park. There's some dead poplars there, and Tenny Creek. We are this fall going to be, instead of just using our vegetation management money to tear stuff out, start putting stuff back, which is pretty exciting. We're going to do two, maybe three revenge projects.
I have a question about that. I was just out at Lackamas Park and doing a wildflower hike. It's gorgeous. But we found a lot of garlic mustard, which is highly invasive. And some people I was with were like, oh my God, you need to take this out right away. And then you need to tell someone, should I do that? Or just you guys come to a meeting?
So that would get reported to Kevin Tyler. Yeah, landside, they noxious weed.
They gave me a pinpoint too, so I could tell them exactly where.
Yes.
The park looks pretty good. I mean, it's getting some blackberry and stuff, but actually, it's amazing that park. It's kind of really invasive.
Yeah, I don't know what sort of frequency it is on for treatment, but it might already be on. Sort of a treatment schedule.
I'm sending you an email right now.
Kevin Tyler.
I'll send it to him and say, so I relay the information that you're asking.
Danielle was on the call. She's looks like she's gotten off the call. She works for Kevin. She used to be in noxious weeds, and so she's. That's good to know. We've started to add park properties more and more to the radar. But there's most departments, there's just limited resources. And so
I know this is the time where I think they usually go out and spray. So there is a potential that it was sprayed. So usually they spray it. And then the next, if you don't, you have to go out there physically, remove it, put it in a bag, and it gets some
okay. One more question about Lackamas Lake Park. So I was just there. The overflow parking lot, is that Camas or is that
Parks? It's being regraded today. Should be regraded by the end of the week.
Devices.
Your Mini Cooper. There are some stormwater run-on issues there where neighbors are dumping their stormwater onto the parking lot. So we're trying to manage that. We'll probably gravel that parking lot in the fall and create some stormwater aprons to try and manage the stormwater run-on. And so we will be tearing down next week. We'll be tearing down the double wide in the park. So we're resurfacing that. We're regrading the parking lot. So when we close the paved parking lot for a week, we will be able to tell people where to go instead of saying, not too bad. So we added that parking lot resurfacing to that project. We're tearing down
Trailer House.
But we're also going to be
tearing it down. Can you repurpose it, recycle it, or?
It's a double wide and it's not movable. It's hemmed in by
30
on three sides by 25 years old. We have
not anymore. It's been
several structures that we've debated as a we have an informal lease committee. There's two properties at three structures at Lower Daybreak. Two of them will come down this year, a double wide, and then an actual stick built home that's been had a renter in it for years and years, and it's just been so unkept. It's really not. we haven't done any formal analysis of whether these properties would be movable or salvageable or restorable, but we don't do an awesome job of being a landlord.
In our defense, most of these properties were acquired with legacy lands funds for the intention of being conservation natural areas, and so the intent was to remove. But for whatever reason, managerially, we never did. And so now we're at that point where we have to sink a lot of money into an asset that we never wanted in the first place, or we remove that asset.
I was at Fred Catherine Creek yesterday, and they have a house that they bought. They mourned the land, they got the house, and they're just tearing it down. But they're having someone come in and take out the cabinets and light fixtures or something, but it just has to go away in the game.
We've talked about that, like, and these salvage companies, these demo companies, they sort of do that informally. Mm-hmm. We don't require it. We make sure that it's been abated for asbestos, tested for lead, so all of the materials are being disposed of legally. From a housing affordability perspective, it's really sad to tear something down. And I've struggled with this on these six or seven homes that we're going to be disposing of, because.
But it's a liability for a lot of reasons. A, the home is a managed level. We have tenants in there that we're not meeting potentially all the rules and regulations that we need to. And finally, it's not the intended use of the property. And so it's something that was supposed to be for a year or two that's just, in some cases, 24 years later. And these properties weren't always managed by Parks and Lands, and so there was potentially different.
You also can claim recreational immunity if you treat it as a residential.
Yes.
So that's a big thing, but it's sort of a minor thing when you look at the overall CMP. But it's something we've talked a lot about.
We're trying to clean up cost centers.
Yeah.
To ensure that there is funds for the other things, and so we're continuing to do these little things that hopefully make it as efficient as lean, so that when we're talking about fees and other things, it's not like I want a Cadillac and that's why, you know, we're all going to deck everyone out with Cadillacs. It's that we're doing them the little things to get to a point where we start even look at fees or rate changes. We're making sure that we've done all that due diligence. So we're not asking for any more than we need based off of that stringent review.
So those are some of the near-term sort of capital major maintenance things that are going on. And we've talked previously about sort of the master plan stuff that's ongoing. I didn't bring my capital plan with my copy of the capital plan with me because it's in my brain right now. So
We will need to be coming up real soon to you guys to give you a sort of update on our capital plan as we're going through that process. So we'll be going out to public process in the next couple months, and so we'll need to be talking to you right before we open that process. We'll have another public open house. Once we have that draft, then we'll go to council. We have a bunch of master plans and development plans that we're getting ready to kick off, and so those will be trickling in as well to start it informing and getting a real person here, not Rocky, to talk about the plan and that process, so that, again, to keep you guys up to date and get some feedback as we're starting to push the green button on that. So
we got a $1.365 million chunk of money from the state. I forgot to mention for improvements at Kleinline Pond. They reached out to us. The representative for that district reached out to us and asked us if we had a project that, if we had some additional money, we could do the project. We have a bridge issue out there, and so we pitched
the bridge going to the pavilion.
That's actually so the way we sold the project to them was we're already committed to doing the parking lot and replacing the shelter. So the shelter will get replaced this year. But if we had some additional funds, we would either replace or retrofit the bridge, do significant sort of ADA improvements to the park, beach sand replenishment, and other things in the park.
Fishing platforms.
Facelift, and they gave us the money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's great news. So that, I mean, it was like they asked us for three options. We did these real down and dirty spreadsheet cost estimates and sent them to them, and then it just sort of they asked us which one was our preferred. We did Whipple Creek.
Expanding the parking lot for Whipple Creek
and rehabilitating the trails and trail realignments, Fine Line, Anchor Creek. So, and since we already have a significant amount of money for Curtain Creek, we felt like it was, you know, asking.
There's a putting a lot more users at Fine Line, and the impact is going to be greater for that investment.
We have spray ground issues at Fine Line Pond with the water playground, and you know, so we're going to be able to prioritize some significant improvements there. Money has to be spent by June 30, 2025, as part of the 2-year budget. So
we can't sit down anymore. He's going to go. All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Sorry for keeping you here for an extra 10 minutes. Especially since I was 10 minutes
long. Well, I only.
Well, Teresa, Jim will have to do a training session, officer training.